Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory, new edition. As we get into March here, my birthday month, Dan and Lindo, welcome in. We're going to have a less explicit show this time around. Apologies to everyone's ears. Obas harmed last time.
He was a bad influence. Sorry.
Lindo got in on the fun. Dan, I don't think he's going to be swearing as much.
I'm here to cool things down.
So we don't football anymore. Basketball is just kind of charging along to the finish line. Dan's Knicks are pretty beat up. Luckily, Brunson avoided injury. Lindo's wearing the Knicks hat, but he's Lakers all the way, and he's just trying to hang in there wherever it goes. I like that Russell's playing well, though. And all of a sudden, we got a panic button loss for the Celtics again after 11 straight wins. An all-out meltdown against the Cavs last night. We'll get into some of that stuff later. But Dan's here off the top to tell us about his big idea for the NBA. And it is relegation, which I've heard about before. I don't agree with. I don't think Lindo agrees with it either. But we're going to hear it out because we have some rubbish teams this year. We got the Pistons going for the all-time worst season. So they'd be right in line for that relegation after a bunch of bad seasons. Wizards, I think, prime for relegation. Would you really want Spurs and Wembanyama, though, potentially going for relegation, Dan?
Well, the truth is the Spurs wouldn't be in my hypothetical scenario because they have 13 wins.
So, yes, tell us the scenario.
Yes, and I just want to point out the Wizards, they're the same record as the Pistons right now. They've lost 16 straight. We thought we saw the worst with the Pistons. But we might see the Wizards break that record in the same season. And, you know, these are fan bases. I mean, the Pistons have a history. They have a fan base. The Wizards, you know, they have some history. But fans are paying to see players compete. Fans are playing to see their teams compete. And we're just not seeing that. 9-whatever is not something that the NBA should be putting out there, should be confident putting out there. And we need to have some sort of consequence for letting teams lose 28 games in a row, lose 16 games in a row. They're just giving away games. And I think we have to look at relegation. Right now, you can make the case the Pistons and Wizards are a bad team. But are they that bad to be losing 28 games? It comes with incentives. If these players know if we don't start winning games, we may actually be in the G League. We may not even be able to compete against the best players. We may actually lose contract incentives if we don't play well. I mean, I think that's what we have to consider. So what I'm proposing, similar to the European soccer model and other leagues, is the bottom two teams, based on standings, get relegated. And where do they get relegated to? That's the real question. And what I'm proposing would cause a whole remake transformation of the G League. Right now, every NBA team has a G League affiliate. So we'd have to do some consolidation. But I think, one, from a competition perspective, it incentivizes teams. Even if you don't have the best team, you're not going to compete for a championship or for a playoff spot. You still don't want to be one of the bottom two teams. So we're not going to see teams giving away games. But also what it does is it broadens the NBA to other markets. You look at states like Idaho, states like Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota.
Mexico City.
You have states, you have cities that could use a basketball team. You could tap into these markets. I mean, Indiana is a great basketball state, but I mean, I don't know much. Maybe I don't know much about Indiana, but I feel like they don't have all that much else going on. But basketball is able to thrive there in that state. So when you look at other states that often get overlooked as it's a flyover state, basketball could thrive there. And I think we got G League affiliates. We have the Miami Heat's affiliate. Where are they out in North Dakota? They got teams sending them basically to Serbia to go train and get the Heat culture. And I feel like we could actually have some of the best players from around the world playing in these cities, these small towns, and just turning it into a great thing. You look at really bad soccer teams like Luton Town in the Premier League. Their fans are super passionate. They don't have the infrastructure. They don't have a lot of marketing. They don't have a lot of hoopla. But there's that passion for the fan base. And there's passion for the sport. So I think you give those teams down in that G League the opportunity, if you win the league, to be promoted to the NBA. And I think that incentivizes guys to come play in the NBA. It incentivizes NBA players and coaches and organizations to not stack picks like Sam Presti in Oklahoma City, but to actually use their picks to actually trade those picks to get talent, because you don't want to end up at the bottom of the league or in the G League. So that's my proposition. Now, the financials behind it, we can save that for another time, but I'm just putting it out there. I truly believe this is something. It may not happen in the next 20 years, but I would love to see it in my lifetime. And I think as the NBA grows and there's more markets it wants to tap into, eventually they're going to reach saturation where they're going to have to start reaching new markets. And I feel like this is something they'll consider.
So I got two questions, Linda, because you're a resident soccer guy. Football. Number one, because the biggest difference, or the two biggest differences, I feel like, are obviously these teams Dan's talking about will be drafting at the top of the draft. So there'd be a weird crossover between, you know, the G League does a draft every year, but it's just kind of fake. And the NBA draft obviously tried to battle tanking by mixing up the top of the draft order here. But you would have two teams leaving the NBA in that case. I don't think, like, the Premier League has a draft necessarily, does it?
No. They have academies that players come from.
They develop.
Then, yeah. So that's the other thing is, in Dan's plan, as he told us coming into this, he'd be consolidating the G League into a smaller league. So you wouldn't have every team having a development
from 30
teams
to 10 teams. So they,
yeah.
10 to 15 teams. But in your scenario, Bobby, if you're the bottom of the league, you're the bottom two, you don't get to draft a player and then disappear into the G League. It's based on we're sending them to the G League before the draft. That's already determined.
So the teams coming up would pick at the top of the draft?
Yes.
Interesting.
And that would give them a chance to actually build a contender. It's not like they're just up there for one time. Now they get to have a big time player. Where, I mean, Wembanyama, you could say he's on a relegation team right now. I mean, they're not that bad, but it's Wembanyama and a bunch of 2K default players, essentially. And you could have had that with the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. And then some coach.
They moved to Indiana, by the way.
Or Indiana Mad Ants. Some coach on the bench, like Mark Jackson right now, doing nothing. He's like, oh, they just drafted that guy. Maybe I can revitalize my coaching career. You got executives coming in. So you could make something happen if you give these teams that opportunity.
And then you also have G League of Night right now, which I don't know what you would do with that whole program. But again, conversation for another day. The first place team in the G League right now, or the two best teams, are your Dakota team, Sioux Falls, and Delaware. Mm-hmm. So
the 87ers or whatever?
Yeah, Blue Coats now. So we'd be dropping Detroit and Washington, D.C. from the NBA in favor of Delaware and South Dakota.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
And the thing is, if these teams truly deserve to be in the NBA, then they go down and then just come back up. You know, they'll play and beat up on the competition. That's the assumption, because they're so much better. So they won't even really mind that, you know, give them a chance to regroup.
Yeah, but there'd have to be there. The financials are intangible from the concept, because you'd have to remove financial benefits that teams have. And I think we talked about that before, that you'd have to reduce your payroll to a certain amount. In the same way that in football, you'd have to, the earnings that you get from winning the championship significantly less, or getting promoted, are significantly less than you would even as the worst team in the Premier League. So financials are intangible. There's no, you know, you said Wyoming. Wyoming has like the population of, like, I don't even know, Richmond, Virginia.
It's like, now imagine LeBron in his farewell tour playing in this gym.
Yeah, it would look like a fucking pro-am game. Sorry, foot view.
He would sell
like a pro-am game.
He would. There would be all this fanfare.
This is a pretty cool G League arena, by the way.
You see what I'm talking about? It's historic. You're gonna have. He's gonna have the Taylor Swift effect in Sioux Falls. And we're not thinking about how much money that could generate for these local economies, bringing basketball, bringing business to these economies if you start expanding. And I think it's something to consider. I think, again, it may not happen in the next 20, 30 years, but as the NBA grows, you're going to reach a saturation point. And they're going to be these states, these cities that you look at. Boise in Idaho, they have a great sport culture. They have a great city. The state as a whole, many people may not want to go there, but you throw LeBron there, or Wemby at the end of his farewell tour, he's torn through Fargo, he's torn through Boise. everyone's going to come out. You're going to have people from Canada coming out. You're going to have people from all other countries coming in. And I mean, it's just tour. Something that
country music tour.
It's just something that I think the NBA will consider as this business model grows. We're going to have $100 million players pretty soon. You're going to have to pay for that somehow.
And the people of Sioux Falls are going to say, let's spend our budget subsidizing this NBA player.
No, it'll be the TV dollars that come in into these communities and ad dollars and more international attention when you have players from countries playing in Spain and Israel and in other parts of the world where they never had a chance to be in the NBA, but now there's a spot on the Delaware, whatever they are.
There's a spot for them now. They won't play for 50K to move to Delaware.
I mean, the money is just indisputable.
Yeah, and my point always has been, my number one thing is all of the fanfare, it doesn't matter. Because when you're talking about like Luton Town and stuff, those are established teams for like decades to hundreds of years, you know, 100 years.
Well,
like,
you got to start somewhere.
Players, fans will not support a team in America. We're talking about Americans on this subject. American fans will not support a team if they're not good. The fanfare will die quickly.
I think it depends what the fanfare is built on. And this is the novelty of, we get to watch the best basketball players in the world play in our small town. And if you win a game, you're happy. But the expectation isn't you're not going to get a bunch of scrubs and you're just going to start winning. It's, we're just here and we're happy to have a team. And by having a team, they get a chance to get more players. You get to develop talent and you get to win.
In that time that they're developing, ideally you would need the fans to just decide, okay, we're not going to be good and we'll pay.
No.
In reality, fans will say, we're not going to be good. I'll come back if they get to be good. But for now, no. I won't.
We're forgetting that all these G League teams aren't playing against the NBA. It'll be a couple every year that get a chance. But the rest of them, they're competing against players of their caliber. We look at how big college sports is, Kentucky, Duke, UNC. Most of those teams, they would probably end up, if you copy-paste them in the NBA, they would be not good. And we're talking about bringing in guys of the same caliber that are competing against each other. So there's competition. There's incentive to win because you get to go to the NBA. So there's excitement around it. Now, when you get to the NBA and you're smoked around, tossed around, I mean, that sucks. But now all of a sudden you're watching the best players in the NBA play in your city. And that means something.
I feel like the difficult part is that we're just getting to the point over the last 2 years here where you start to recognize your G League team as like this guy, and that, like, there's your starting lineup, that's your team. But so much of that is because those guys are either your two-way guys with that NBA team, so they're kind of part of the NBA team, or like assignees. Like, the main Celtics have three two-way guys and then an assignee. So it's basically four Boston Celtics players comprising like the lineup and like the star power of that team. And that's like a team that actually uses its G League like at a high level. So yeah, you're going to consolidate it. I don't know. Where do you put the development then for teams that lose?
You'd have to take that back into your main organization.
Yeah.
So you'd be doing that on the side.
They'd become, if you're copying football, they would become your reserve team.
Yeah.
So every team would have a reserve team effectively.
And how many of these guys are really playing anyway? I mean, you look at the NFL, they have practice squads of guys. I mean, Tommy DeVito was a practice squad guy. And he ended up being the starting quarterback. So you could have a little practice team and you actually have coaches who develop rather than sending them to.
So that's what the G League is right now. You'd have to shift those G League teams you're talking about under different ownership.
But how many of those G League guys even make it up? How many two ways can you even have? So there are a lot of guys on those G League teams that'll just never make it. So it's not necessarily the same, but I think one thing
would be a reserve team or under 23.
I think they said something like 33% of the league now or something like that has been in the G League at this point.
It's a fair percentage, but I think you can consolidate that at the top of the league. And ultimately, you just want more competition. You want to incentivize that. And the NBA wants to make more money. And I think we're not there yet. I agree. We don't need to do this yet. But eventually the NBA is going to get to a point where it's like, how can we make more money? How can we expand our game? And there'll be a glaring local opportunity to do that. You don't got to go to China. You don't have to go to Africa. You can literally go to your backyard. and start NBA teams. And I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, and the teams that bump up, we get that opportunity. The teams that go down, though, and here's the killer window, and you're losing, like, you know, Detroit and Washington aren't, like, the biggest markets in the league, but, you know, those are two real cities. Those teams are going to lose everybody who has the opportunity to leave right away.
That's what happens in football. Yeah.
And then they're going to get stuck there, maybe. Now, this is the debate we had, too. Like, are the teams that go down, Detroit and Washington, going to immediately dominate the G League and then come right back up? I think that's more likely than not.
Because the revenue would drop significantly, you have to cut your salary and costs significantly as soon as that happens. So you'd have to get rid of expensive players if you drop down. So some of that would kind of work itself out a little bit. But because, like, whatever per team revenue is in the NBA, like, as a base, probably be cut like in half. So think of if minimum salary is 130 million, you'd have to turn 130 into, like, you know, 70, like 65.
That'd be tough in basketball too.
I know. So it's just really, really complicated. And I don't know why Dan didn't just go, like, you know, we'll bring a team to St. Louis and Nashville and, I don't know, Albuquerque. How did it go straight and bring a team back to Seattle? How does it that we're putting teams in Idaho? Because
it's the two things I want to accomplish: incentivizing competition and expanding the NBA market. And just adding those teams doesn't incentivize competition, because those teams can tank just as any other team, and it doesn't really expand to new markets.
So what teams are we taking here? Let's roll through them real quick. We got Delaware's probably out, right?
Don't repeat any teams, by the way. Any teams that are in a market, so like Westchester Knicks or Long Island Nets, like, don't include those. That are in strange locations.
We got Delaware. They're probably out, right? Well, we might have to just do the 10 teams that are in other locations, but let's leave Delaware out for now. Are we going to include Birmingham, Alabama?
Yes, we are.
All right, they're in. Are we going to include?
I'm only laughing because he was sure of it. He was like, oh, yeah, no. He's like, he's already done the list. He's
the Birmingham MLKs.
Are we going to include Grand Rapids, Michigan, I believe?
I think so.
Greensboro, North Carolina?
Yep.
Basketball State. Sioux Falls. I know you're really excited about Sioux Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Rio Grande.
Yeah.
Mexico City.
I think so. Rio Grande and Mexico City. Maybe it's a stretch, but we can make it work.
Austin.
Nah.
Not what?
You got the Mavs and you got the Rockets and you got the Spurs. So they don't need another Texas team.
We're running out of cities here. Iowa, wherever Iowa.
For sure.
And we need two more. So let's go back to Delaware is in now, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we only
Vancouver.
There's no Vancouver currently.
I thought you were expanding to new markets. Now you're going back to the old ones. I already said Seattle and stuff.
Forget Vancouver.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of other cities.
I think our last one would be, it'd have to be Austin.
I'm not liking Austin.
What if we had an Albuquerque team?
Yeah, I like Albuquerque.
I'm just saying, I'm going off the G League teams we have now.
It just sounds like they need a basketball team.
Now, there's some that are close. Like, I don't think we're going to do Maine. They're out. Stockton, California, wherever the hell that is. Close enough to Sacramento. Santa Cruz, same thing. And then you have a ton of teams that are in the same city as their team now.
Mm.
You got College Park, Long Island, Westchester, as Lindo mentioned.
I think you get a Long Island team. Because the thing about a lot of New York sports.
Dan's from Long Island, viewers.
Long Island just has to, like, jump onto one of those sports.
But you don't root for the Long Island hockey team.
Well, I mean, they're not really they are the Islanders, but they're not my team. And I think they need more teams like that represent Long Island.
So you cannot root for them?
I mean, it's a personal opinion, you know. I was never really
everyone on Long Island roots for the Knicks, don't they?
For sure. Yeah.
So that's the other problem here is you're gonna have to.
But if you have a Long Island team, or you tapped into the Long Island culture, whatever that may be.
They have one. The Long Island Nets. They got them now.
Yeah.
What do those attendance records look like?
They're basically they're affiliated with Brooklyn, affiliated with Jersey. You need
and
a
the Nets are struggling enough.
Yeah, exactly.
That means you should check them out because those guys will probably be playing in the league soon.
Maybe. But I want to also bring attention to the minor league model. And I feel like we had this discussion before where a lot of these minor league teams do get fans and they do have pretty passionate fans, and them winning doesn't really mean anything. It's the opportunity to see good talent, see good baseball, and it's cheap and they're able to sustain themselves. You know, I mean, the pandemic happened, those players are struggling, but for the most part, they're able to sustain themselves and actually develop fan bases.
But you know, the Mets aren't playing the Salem Red Sox, you know what I mean? Like, there's no interplay like that from one clearly established team with a big infrastructure and big payroll versus like an ultra underdog. Like, that's just not really going on. Like, the concept to me seems so distinct that to me it just seems like the bad teams will just get cooked. Die off before it can even get to somewhere.
Those teams that make it to the NBA, and that enough will be exciting for those fans because they hadn't had an opportunity to see that level of play.
We always had the college, you know, couldn't the best college team beat the best NBA team?
Which wouldn't be the case.
Like, but I feel like those college teams at the top that we always debate about are better than the best G League teams.
It's possible, but these G League teams now can tap into players overseas who've been playing for 15 years.
Okay, so they're going to up there.
Yeah, MVP.
That's why I say they'll need new ownership. Like, you're going to have your reserve teams.
And you're going to have a lot of investment in scouting, like how MLB does scouting. They're in every corner of the world trying to find somebody who's like 8 years old just swinging a bat for the first time. So
they're going to need a lot more money fast. And to make it
– yes.
Make it attractive to new owners, they're gonna have to move, like Lindo said. So we can't do Sioux Falls, we can't do Delaware.
They have to be in a place where the money at a starting point, even if it's we won't make money for a while, where the starting point is establishing somewhere. That's why I think of, you know, Idaho, I just don't see it. Or Wyoming has, once again, the population of a mid-sized city, the whole state. So it's like,
it's just, you got to think about the demand, and the demand might not be there right now, but if you start bringing in Kevin Durant, Steph Curry into these cities, the opportunity to host those games from an ownership perspective, you'll be like, I'll invest in that. Like, people weren't really living in Wyoming buying property, but then all of a sudden all eyes were on Wyoming, property skyrocketed. And we've seen that over different pockets of the country. So it's like, you got to think about that demand and the attention that would be brought onto these cities. And I mean, I think from an investment perspective, it's definitely long-term and it's definitely wishful that you can build a team, but then you got to make the right decisions to build that team. And that's the incentive.
Also, players be getting drafted to somewhere like Charlotte and be like, oh, I don't know about Charlotte. What will they do when it's like, oh, you're going to Sioux Falls?
I'm going to Sioux Falls. And like, opportunity.
What? You're going to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and Helena, Montana. They're going to be like, hell no.
Think about it. Sioux Falls eventually builds a team. They make it up to the NBA. They build a team through the draft. They don't go back down after relegation, but they keep climbing up the standings, and they win an NBA championship. That story.
What? We have NBA teams that haven't even won championships yet.
I'm just saying, Sioux Falls knocking off the Lakers. Sioux Falls knocking off the Celtics in the NBA finals. Think about the magnitude of that, the story. You know how ESPN loves the story, the drama. That's what's going to sell. That's what's going to make more money. And
why don't we loop in Real Madrid and all of them?
Stories like Ted Lasso, the fictional things that people love. I mean, you got to start tapping into some of that, and it increases the game. You're bringing in more talent. You're making more money, and it's more competitive.
You know what I think is more likely? They'd loop in the European teams over there.
That market still doesn't even make sense. The logistics of it right there.
Not going to be flying people from L.A. to France to go play a game.
Must I say for the 100th time that players on Real Madrid and Olympiacos, right, the best teams in Eurobasket or EuroLeague, I forget which one it's classified as, the best teams, they got players that are used to make other teams in the NBA sound terrible, i.e. Campazzo is on Real Madrid.
And but aren't those teams better than the G League teams?
But hold on. They'll use his name first to say, this is how bad Jokic's team was. They had losers like Campazzo. And Campazzo can go to Europe and play on the best team.
Right.
It doesn't add up. And the logistics of flying to Madrid and flying them to Athens, Greece, all the time, like, it doesn't.
We don't know if the best team in Europe would beat a G League team, but we do know talent comes from Europe, talent comes from Africa, talent comes from Asia, and can play well. So if you're able to find those talents, I mean, imagine if Luka was 14, 15, instead of being whatever MVP of his league, he was in Fort Wayne, he was in Delaware. He was cooking them. And at 18, he brought his team up to the league and was winning playoff games at 18 in the NBA. I'm just saying it's possible. And these teams now have the incentive to go find those players. They're going to do the work that the NBA teams aren't willing to do, because it's like, we'll just draft these kids. We don't have to worry about it. And look at owners like James Dolan. I mean, he's by far in the league, by even our fans, we don't like him. But he can just sit up there and say, we're just going to win. And if we don't win, I'm still going to make money. And we see that across the board with ownership in the NBA and most ownership.
They definitely get rid of tanking.
Yeah. And I think the owners really have to pay more attention to who they're hiring, you know, what they're doing with scouting. They have to be more hands-on. The GM's role becomes extremely important. I mean, I talk about Cashman, how he's living off of the 90s run, and he's just there doing whatever he wants now, saying whatever he wants, making fun of people, and he's fine. And I feel like in a situation like this in the NBA, if we brought this in, you could get relegated. And as a result, you could get fired. And I feel like we'll see a lot more movement. We're not going to see.
Oh, you get fired so fast if you get relegated. Everybody would get fired.
Exactly.
That's what happens. I tell you what, if 15-year-old Luka saw Fort Wayne, he'd be saying, take me back to Slovenia.
Oh, my God. Man, no, if the Lakers got relegated, you would be absolutely done with them.
But I'm saying it just wouldn't happen.
I mentioned the Lakers.
It just wouldn't happen for those teams unless they deserved it, because they're going to do everything possible. No, it would be the most explosive trade deadline every year, because even the worst teams are like, how can we get a seventh guy on our roster who could get us a couple more games so we avoid relegation? Everything would be action-packed.
I don't think those big teams would ever get relegated unless they just made like, moves.
Here's the even funnier part, if you want to make it a copy, is that so like for promotion in the championship, there's six teams, right? That go up. The first team is up, and then the next few battle it out in a tournament. But it will be funny is if they had a relegation playoff, sort of like what the Bundesliga in Germany has, mm-hmm. where it's like several teams are involved and like trying to not get relegated, like trying to not be one of those teams. Yeah. So like imagine it's two teams that will get relegated, but it's like six of them got to play to not get relegated.
Another tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying there's ways to mix and match and to make more competition happen. We're not there yet. We don't need to do it right now. But I do believe 20, 30, 40 years from now, they're going to be looking for something. And this is an easy solution.
And it's showing up in Helena, Montana and Cheyenne, Wyoming.
For sure. I'm telling you.
Las Cruces, New Mexico. It's coming.
And we're going to have 40 win one seeds, because everyone's trying their hardest to win games. It's not going to be like, oh, the Celtics can just stack up these wins against these people who don't care, who aren't playing. I'm not saying that's what the Celtics are doing. They're playing well. But if everyone's giving your best, every coach, every GM, everybody in the team to keep their jobs, essentially, you're not going to have these warrior type seasons. So
they do it against the Lakers right now.
And are the Lakers trying their very best? We don't really know that.
All right, well, we're glad Dan brought this to the table, because there's not a whole lot else going on. We're gonna let you go, Dan, and Lindo and I are gonna wrap this up here with a little NBA talk.
Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Use the code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
All right. And we want to let you know real quick, new frontline sponsor on Dome Theory, Garden Report, CLNS Media is Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. The easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports, it's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Had a tough time so far. I nailed that Tatum over for the Celtics-Warriors game on Sunday. But the Curry over, not even close at 4. So it's fun. It's interesting going into each game, see where those stat lines are at. It's the most fun you can have, winning 25 times your money, even beyond football season. Now basketball is still rolling on. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. And they're bringing your gifts early with a bunch of different bonuses going on all the time. And you got the Specials League, a league created specifically for combo projections that include two or more players from different sports or leagues. For example, LeBron James and Travis Kelce back there in football season for three-pointers and receptions. So check that out. Go to prizepicks.com right now /CLNS and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. They'll match 100% up to $100 at prizepicks.com/CLNS. And it's PrizePicks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Go check out the app. Again, use that promo code CLNS.
Linda, speaking of the Warriors, they're going to beat the Bucks by 30 tonight. How do you feel about that?
They needed it after the bogus excuses on Sunday that had me feeling about as good as I ever had before about the Celtics. They had a little Warriors thing going on as recently as December, a tough loss there where they blew a 17-point lead in the second half. This time they wallop them. It looks like the Warriors are going to get back on track. And I've said, Lindo, I still believe in them. I still can't rule them out in the West. I think the West is just going to be absolutely grueling. And we saw it again last night as we record this with the Suns beating the Nuggets. And I know we all kind of look at the Nuggets as this favorite, forced to repeat, best player in the league. That's always a big, advantage over your competition in any given series. But if the playoffs started today, it'd be Nuggets-Suns. And that's 6-7 games right there, isn't it?
Yeah. It's funny because, the Suns won the other night, and I just remember I didn't get to watch. I just saw the score at the end, and I remembered they didn't have Devin Booker, and they still put up a win.
And the Nuggets collapsed late. It was a bad collapse. Now tell me
how you believe in the Warriors.
Steph,
love Giannis. This team is are they in second or third? And you don't believe in the Bucks. How do you match those up?
I think when the time comes and the Warriors get healthy again, they were missing some other guys, Wiggins among them, in that Celtics game. When they get healthy, they've won 7 of 10. Their young guys are starting to figure out just enough. Like Kuminga looks pretty good. Moody's giving them some minutes finally. And tonight, let's see what their stat lines are looking like. 29 for Curry, 20 for Kuminga. Yeah, Clay off the bench, who's, maybe find himself a little bit. I like some of their young guys like Trayce Jackson-Davis. And I like Chris Paul, even though he really can't score anymore, which is concerning. But they have guys, and they have the core, and they have the system, they have the coach. Now, I'm a little concerned because last year they couldn't go out and beat the Lakers. And that's really not one of the more daunting
opponents in the West.
The Lakers turned into,
I don't even know. If you remember last year, LeBron gave up on the season, and then the Lakers started winning. So he said, actually, guys, I'm back.
That gave him a little second win. But I don't know. I'm not saying they're going to win the West. I'm not even saying they're going to the West Finals. But right now, what would the Warriors be facing if they're the 10 seed, right? So they'd have to win that play-in twice and then be 8. So they'd play the Timberwolves round one. I know you're a big Timberwolves believer. Are you taking the Warriors or Timberwolves?
It's not even necessarily that. What I have said is that why are they undeserving of the respect of being a one seed? I mean, yes, we saw what the Lakers did from the play-in. Yes, the Warriors can beat a team like how they beat the Kings last year, right, as the underdog. We get that. And KD, he's on and off, and the Suns aren't that high. They're like 6, something like that. Yes, the Nuggets are losing some games, so they're not up there. But it's like, I get that the big name stars, they are not there in the one seed. And unless you put Shea there, they're not in the two seed either, right? As they keep switching back and forth. But why are the Timberwolves and the Thunder just undeserving of the respect of saying, hey, they have some expectation? Shouldn't they be trying to, at this point, say, give us some expectation. We're succeeding. Over the course of a season, we're putting it together. The Timberwolves, I mean, their offense is concerning. It's not that great. It's right in the middle of the pack. But their defense is several points better than, you know, at least it was in recent history, several points better than the second best defense. I think they were like 2 points better than the second best defense. They get no love as a team that seemingly has put together a very well-rounded team, rounded offense, good scoring off the bench as well, and productivity. They got the Twin Towers. I don't get why they don't deserve the respect of that. I guess I can understand OKC because they're younger, but it's like Minnesota has some veterans there. They have Conley. They have Cat. They have Rudy. And obviously the new face star is Ant, but they've got the why don't they deserve the respect to say, hey, we expect you to try and do something this year? Why is it just, we know you're going to lose, go have fun?
Because they're in the stronger conference, and the East was better last year. I feel like the Heat knock off the Bucks, and you looked at the Bucks as the one seed last year and thought they were going to do something. I know they had the injury, but they lose round one, and then the West, the Grizzlies go out, and again injuries involved there too, but they lose round one as well. Kings too is the three seed, so you had three of the top six seeds in each conference losing round one. You go back to 2022. The Heat make these finals, but don't make the finals as the one seed. The Bucks go down round two as the three seed. And I believe the Grizzlies snuck past the Wolves that year, but they lost to the Warriors in round two. So the Warriors snuck through as the three seed. The Suns, I want to say, lost in the second round as the one seed that year. So these top seeds don't guarantee you're going to move on. And it's usually one of the top four that's going to make the finals, but it's not necessarily the one or the two. And I think if you look at the West right now, I mean, the Nuggets are right there. They're a game back of one. But if you're going to rank the teams most likely to make the finals out of the West right now, it's the three seed Nuggets. So the four seed Clippers, and then maybe you start to rank the Thunder and Timberwolves in there. But that could mean a second round exit for one of those two. Hell, they could lose in the first round the way the West is looking. Kings, Thunder.
Who do you assume will be the teams in the play-in? Do you think it'll line up how it is right now? Kings, Mavs,
I think we're starting to see the teams that are in that 10. So Warriors are in as 10, Jazz are out. You have a 5.5 game difference there. And then in the East, you have the Nets starting to really fall behind the Hawks.
But I'm saying right now in the West, would you say the 7, 8, yeah. 9, 10, you think that's going to be about right? So out of those four, who do you think it's Warriors, Lakers? Do they have to play each other first, 9, 10?
Yeah, so that team goes home, and then 7, 8 gets a second chance if they lose.
Okay, so which two out of those four do you think make it on?
I would
set up
pick,
as it is today.
As it's set up now. That's a tough pair of matchups there. I have to go Lakers over Warriors. Especially based on recent history.
And Kings Mavs, who wins that? Kings?
I think Mavs take it.
You think the Mavs beat the Kings?
Yeah.
Would the Lakers beat the Kings? One off. They play them now and lose.
I think so. The Kings, I can't see them knocking off the Lakers.
So I'm doing all this to say, so you'd have Mavs 7, Lakers 8. Do the Mavs beat the Thunder?
Can Mavs beat the Thunder? Yeah. I wouldn't pick them to.
You wouldn't pick them to?
No.
Would you pick the Timberwolves to beat the Lakers in a 7-game series? That would be historic. That would be historic for the Lakers to win as the 8.
I think the Wolves would like grind past them in 7. But again, okay. Towns playing like an idiot. you might lose that game seven if you're Minnesota.
So, but I'm just saying. But I'm just saying. So see how when you just if you like logistically
the West is
put it
so
out,
hard this year. I could see the 8 seed winning the West this year. Like it's that crazy.
The Mavs would win the West.
No,
it'd be
top six. Yeah,
I doubt it. And look, here's another thing: the Pelicans are right in there. No one even cares. I mean, no one's even mentioning them. Zion is playing. Brandon Ingram's playing. No one cares.
Do you feel the same about them as you have recently?
Herb Jones is an all defensive player. No one cares. Like what did you say?
They have a good coach too. Yeah, no one cares about them. It's crazy. I think people either expecting one of them to get hurt or they're seeing Zion play at not quite that same level this year and not take them as seriously, which I understand too.
But it's contributing to wins though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, they're winning games.
I mean, they were the one seed that year though when he was rolling.
So there's out of the top 10 teams, it's like four or five teams that people are just automatically just across the list. They're just like, I don't even know what they're doing there. Like, they just already are written off. And we still got games to play, man. We still got, like, you know, whatever, 20-ish games left. And it's already, like...
And it's so tight. Teams are done. Right now, the top four teams are separate. The top three teams are separated by a game. The top four seeds are separated by 2.5 games. There's a gap to 5 of 3.5. And then 5 through 10 are separated by 4 games. So any one of those teams can move up pretty fluidly between those 6 through 10 spots and the 1 through 4 spots. So a lot's going to change. But this leads me to my question. As we debate that Thunder-Wolves thing and have our Celtics conversations, because I was just getting there on believing in them, and then they blow a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter, their biggest blown lead in the fourth in 10 years. At Cleveland against a Cleveland team without Mitchell, without Mobley, and take a BS shot at the end, Tatum did, down one. Again, I'm not pushing the panic button off one game, but it does remind me of some of the loose tendencies I've seen from the Celtics in the past. So the whole NBA world was ready to say Nuggets Celtics. You know, despite all these other teams being in the mix here, they're playing Thursday night. Is it still safe to say, even if you're not, it's not a slam dunk, there's always injuries and everything else, but if all is equal, do you think it's most likely that we're going to see Nuggets Celtics when we get to June?
If Kawhi and Paul George are healthy, I'm taking the Clippers. I think I said that.
And you like the Celtics in the East?
Yeah, not even close. I remember you asked, why does no one care about the Magic and fourth? Well, because everyone already thinks Celtics have it locked up. And let me just say, you know, I really wish I was in your position. This whole conversation just tells you how good the Celtics are, because they've been just running through teams. They've probably, you know, 10 wins out of the last 10, you know, stuff like that. You know, they're just killing them. They lose one game on a thing when a guy who scores 4 points a game scores 20 in the fourth. It's not a regular performance. And this one game happens, and people are on the verge of saying, this might not be it. They're still up, you know, however many games in the East. They're still killing teams routinely. And it's like they lose one crazy – the type of performances that usually happen against the Lakers. They have one of those games happen against them, against a guy who literally you wonder, did they just get Dean Wade? And you're like, someone has to explain to you, no, he's been there like 5 years and hasn't really gotten better. And he's just, like, someone has to explain who that guy is to you. And still the Celtics think, oh, man, this just demonstrates we just don't know. Yeah, you do, because you've seen it for, like, 50 games this season. Like, or whatever they're at, 42.
But aren't the
43.
Playoffs a little different?
Playoffs are absolutely different, but we're having this conversation based on the regular season. So if we're doing regular season, we're staying on regular season.
I don't want to make this. I don't want to make this comparison, because I don't think they're that kind of team. The talent level is just so high.
You shouldn't even make the comparison.
I just want to throw it out there because I did hear this recently. I think Bill Simmons said it. 31 teams, I want to say now, have started 48-12 in history, as the Celtics just did. One of them was the 2015 Atlanta Hawks, who went 60-22.
Okay.
Do you remember what happened to them?
Hold on. How many total teams did you mention?
There was 31 ever.
And you said, remember that one team? Is the exception the rule, Bobby? What about those other 30? Are you going to pull up every history of the other 30 for me?
I'm just saying, at 48-12 in 2015, did you look at the Hawks and say, they're going?
It was way different. It was way, 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 way different. And it's because everyone already thought the Hawks were fraud that year, and they got proved it. But they thought that. And there may have been a guy on that Hawks team that you may favor nowadays. That's interesting. Way different because we're talking about a Celtics team that, should they go on and win the finals, will be remembered as one of the teams, right? Their starting five, incredible. Their bench is out of this world. I mean, 1-5, someone else said it today, if your worst player is Porzingis, you got a really good team. And so in starting five, their worst player, if it's Drew Holiday or Porzingis, if that's your fifth best player on the starting five, you should be winning all the time. And they are. And so I don't know how, you know, this just feels a little forced jitters. You're trying to remember yourself. Right now, the Celtics are omnipotent, and they're trying to remember what it's like to be mortal. It's like Apollo just imagining stubbing his toe. He's like, you know when you hit the side of the – no, you don't know that, okay, because you're really, really good. So Celtics
this
are
year
really,
feels
really
different.
Good.
This they're year really, feels really different
good.
To me.
And Celtics fans are trying to figure out a way, oh, no, because we're not that good anymore. I miss when fans used to say, our team is so good, we will kill your team. And you check out the team they got, and the team was ass. They sucked. Now the Celtics.
I used to do that in the Isaiah years.
The team now is utterly dominant, and fans are finding ways to say we have this issue and this issue, and we don't know about the coach, and we don't know about Jason in crunch time. And meanwhile, they're winning like 9 games in a row, and they have all these concerns. These concerns are at the moment. If we're discussing play now, they're invisible. It's fairy dust. If you want to talk about how those results transform into the playoffs and Joe's impact there, okay. But you can't use this year to explain that. If you're just talking in general, sure, but you can't use them being the obviously best team in the league, obvious best five with an incredible bench out there. You can't use this year and the success that they've had and say, well, remember they lost last year. Well, this is a different team this year.
It's a completely different team. It. And that's why I'm withholding judgment, because last year I was pretty adamant that I didn't like their looseness throughout the year and just the way they looked at times. I have nothing to argue against this year, really. That was only the third bad loss of the year, I want to say, from them. They had one against Charlotte early. They had one at Milwaukee where they were down like 40 at halftime and they just had everybody, but it was like the fifth game in 7 nights. So you just kind of threw that one in the trash. And that's it.
Yeah.
All the other ones have been close finishes against good teams or, you know, something of the like. And one of those was against Denver. Game that came down the buzzer, really good game. Two teams that looked finals bound in that matchup. Brown's questionable. I think the Nuggets are healthy right now, so it should be another good one Thursday night as we record this. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that's going to be the finals. I believe in the Celtics getting out of the East, and I still believe in Jokic over everybody else in the West. But again, you look at like a Phoenix, Denver out there, and just. It's grueling. I don't know who's going to come out of there, and a lot of it's going to come down their path. So maybe Denver, despite their best efforts, will just face a monstrous path out there. Before we get out of here, want to squeeze in a baseball minute. I think we'll save that for another day, but you know the deal. Yankees, high hopes, but Linda's probably not feeling too great about it yet. Red Sox, dumpster fire.
Yeah, so Yankees, it's just like every other year where the Yankees could put out whatever. If they're handing out big contracts, Yankees fans will tell you they're the best. And this year they actually did get one of the best in Soto. Concerns about age, concerns about injuries, as they always keep recurring. But right now, how can you not be hopeful about the Yankees? I mean, how can you not look at this team and say, we should be doing it? We'd feel even better if we could find a way to mute Giancarlo's sentence on life, but that's a different conversation. How can you not feel so happy to look at this team and say, there's nothing wrong?
At least there's something to be excited about.
Yeah, and then you look at the Red Sox, and you guys, I mean, you can tell it better than I can. You say, the fans are never coming back. We got the same guys. We might as well have kept Bloom. You got to explain that because I can't do it. I can't be Bobby. You got to be Bobby here.
I kept Bloom. I don't forgive Bloom because he made so many bad moves, and that's what he got fired for, and that's why I still don't look at it and say, oh, it was ownership, it wasn't him. Ownership obviously had an outsized role in it now, looking back on it, and he did make some crafty moves, so I'm loosening my Bloom hate a little bit. I'm leaning off the blame pie, or I'm reducing the blame pie, his share there. But man, it's tough to imagine him not doing a better job than this. this is awful. Breslow, in his first move, and again, the fact that Breslow is the GM, I like them as a player. I guess he was in Chicago with Theo doing a little something there. But like, your only move's Giolito, like a cheap out move, and the guy needs Tommy John weeks into spring training. And he's probably never going to pitch for this team now.
I do want to say, that does not mean Sale would be healthy at the same time. I just want that to be known.
I'm just saying, though, Sale.
It's not a zero sum of injuries. Like, oh, if he's injured, then he's good. They could both be injured.
Five shutout innings for Sale to start spring training, who they're paying this year in Atlanta. Atlanta, one of the best teams in the league, wanted him.
That logic never matters to me. They're all professional teams. Never matters to me.
I'm just saying. And then the second baseman who came back in that trade is hurt and isn't ready for opening day. So there you have it. And the manager is just a lame duck, I guess. This is going to be a bad one, Lindo. The last two were bad. Oh, man, just you wait.
Here's what I said it to you earlier.
Now they're talking about the outfield. They're playing first base.
Here's what I'll say, though. In you saying, they basically have the same team from last year. Why do you assume they'd get significantly worse than last year? Like, couldn't it just be like last year? Not like last year was good, but what if they're just like last year?
I mean, just like last year is pretty bad. And it'd be tough to, like, distinguish. I guess the fact would be there wouldn't be, like, a good month or two, which they've had the last couple of years that have made me be a little hopeful in those spots. But, man, if it's
a good month or a bad month? How can you predict a month?
Well, that's, you know, that showed what those teams were capable of if they maybe patched up their holes. Similar to this one, like maybe you go and get a pitcher or two, which they were seemingly going to do this offseason but didn't. This would be looking like a competitive team because they have a decent lineup. But when you consider the fielding not getting better here and the pitching getting much worse, oh man, it could be ugly. I mean, their rotation right now is Pivetta, Bayo, Hauk, Crawford, and Whitlock, who's a reliever.
Look, man, I'm not telling you to believe in it, but we talk about it every day, right?
It's dire.
We're talking about it every day, and it's like, man, I mean, at what point do you just say,
is Liverpool not spending like this? Like, are they like tightening the belt this much there too?
You don't want to ask Liverpool fans about what FSG looks like. The money is spent, but not in a way to compete with the best person. So, like, imagine.
I think that's where the Red Sox are at.
Imagine everyone was at zero, and the Red Sox went out and bought three good players. And it's like, yeah, that's really good. They got three good players. And then the Red Sox, imagine they're the second best team. And then imagine the best team went out and bought seven good players.
Like the Dodgers did.
Yeah, that's Liverpool. So it's like FSG spends money, but in order to spend money, they have to get money back, and they never compete fully with their rivals.
That's like this Montgomery thing right now. Like, we're going to go get Montgomery only if we can dump Jansen and not pay a cent for him. And I'm not even going to be that excited if that happens.
And so that's why FSG is so hated, and FSG wins, right? They find a way to win, and they do it. But they always find a way right after they win to just pull right back.
They are cheap as it gets.
Yeah.
And they are
and
charging.
John Henry doesn't care.
And they are charging at both arenas, I'm sure, the absolute top prices you can imagine.
So they tried to raise season ticket prices at Anfield a couple years ago, and Liverpool fans were like, absolutely not. And so they had to recall it, and they had to be like, actually, just kidding. We'll take it back down, right? And Liverpool's doing all kinds of stuff. They're expanding their grounds from, like, it was 43 a few years ago, and it should be around 65 when the stand is finished. So it's like they're doing things, and they're rebuilding with a new generation of players as their beloved coach Klopp is leaving out, and they're hoping Xabi Alonso comes next season. Right? They're doing stuff, but Man City's just doing more stuff. So it's like, yes, you're doing things, but they're doing better things. And I think as Red Sox, right now you're like, we're not even doing things. We haven't even reached things yet.
They didn't do anything. Unbelievable. But I don't want to talk too much about it. It'll be all year to do that. 5 minutes here. Syracuse men. We have a little high hopes for the women. But the men look done. They had a chance against Clemson, final game. It was going to be interesting one way or another. You get back at Gerard for the big game he had at the Dome. Or Gerard gets another round of revenge, and this guy, who none of us loved, who we frankly thought wasn't good at Syracuse.
That's the wrong framing. He was good. But he'd score 20 a game. Or, you know, not literally. He'd score 17 a game. And he'd score 17 points in the first half and then score none in the second half and play no defense. And defense,
yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think that worked out to being a bad player in the end. He had some good games. There was a Miami one. I remember he let a big comeback in. You could probably count a few of them. That tournament run, he was solid too, I want to say, in 2021.
But Buddy was all the guy we were focusing on. Right? So when we had a main shooter, he was behind. And then when he was the main shooter, we were like, send this guy to South Carolina.
So, yeah. And I don't think any of us were like, oh man, they lost Gerard. No. For him to come out and unload, I think he went 5 of 6 from three in the return to the Dome. And it's funny that we had like a return revenge game in college. You don't really see that.
Yeah.
For him to do it again in round two and effectively knock Syracuse out of tournament contention.
Yeah.
That's a great story, but man, does it hurt.
Look, I said before the game, Red did so much more than I thought he would. On regular season alone, best regular season for Syracuse in 10 years. Still finished above 500 in ACC play in his first year.
He shot 8 for 12 from three.
Yeah, not too many great wins, but not too many bad losses either. I mean, he had a steady team. He had disciplinary issues with Judah Mintz. He figured him out. He had disciplinary issues with Benny Williams. He said, you go do your own thing, not around here, right? So he showed leadership already. He developed his own little thing. 20 wins, develops his own thing of mixing man and zone, you know, some of the new with some of the old. A team that from the start, right, we said when Jesse wasn't coming back, we said, these guys suck. You know, praying Judah would come because we're like, if Judah's not there, we're not going to have a team, right? And so he did it with a team that we didn't think was good. He got the best out of them, turned Kadir Copeland into a true utility player. Judah Mintz, you know,
Malik Brown, a legitimately
Malik Brown, great Chris center. Bell, a real three threat, and they've got, you know, a 5-star coming out of IMG next year. So all credit to Red. Season's not over, right? Anything could happen. We don't know. But credit to Red as it stands, because when it started, I just didn't know. It seemed like the right move, right? Instead of like the best move. It's just the guy's already there, he knows stuff. He's been around. Let's keep him. But he's showing it was a good move to keep him. I'm glad they got him. I can't wait for next year.
Yeah. And, who knows? Usually when we're like, oh, they're done, they come around and, you know, do something unexpected in the tournament.
Oh, yeah. Now that they're a lower seed, now they're going to start earlier, they're going to get a win, right? They're going to get one win. They'll need at least two more to even it matter. But the season's not over yet. But I'm saying as of right now, if they do lose next game, positive season. This is better than we thought it would. If the season started and you say they're going to be over 500 in ACC play, they're going to have the best win total in the regular season in 10 years, would you take that? You would have said absolutely.
I believe I would have. And I've enjoyed it generally. There's been a few frustrating losses, but nothing like earth shattering. And we had those in recent years, you know, Bryant and all the rest. BC was frustrating, and I said, you know, at least we have BC victories in our back pocket still, and you can't count on that quite anymore either, which stinks, but on the whole, you're right. You couldn't have expected much better from a first season, given everything that happened. I'm just bummed that Judah is that guy and showed it again. and he's never not going to get that chance NCAA to play tournament. In March.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of like Sean Tucker. Like, he was that guy, and they did nothing with his tenure. Yeah. Didn't get to play in any big games. Kind of faded by the end of it. And then, you know,
maybe LeQuint will get that chance this year.
We're excited for football. We'll talk about that later this summer. But for now, that's Dome Theory. A little Syracuse talk to cap it off is pretty fitting. So thanks to Dan for being here. Thanks to Lindo for always being here. Check us out, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, all the rest. Check out PrizePicks, prizepicks.com/CLNS for your 100% bonus up to $100. Really easy to get started over there. It's fun. Check it out. And for now, I'm Bobby Manning. We're back for Nuggets Celtics tonight, I think, as you hear this, Thursday night, late night edition of the show, 12:30 Garden Report, I believe, with the 10 o'clock tip. So stay tuned for that and join us late night. I think it'll be me and John, and we'll be back on the Dome Theory before long. That's it. See you guys soon.